Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
For public forum.
Public forum is an opportunity for the public to get up and speak about anything they'd like to discuss.
We did give a quick breakdown just so the board and the citizens could understand. If you see it on the right-hand side, running a 0.32 mils, we would then deduct that from the 5955 millage rate, and it would generate approximately $5.4 million.
You may remember last week I told you that the Santa Rosa County Commission was considering not one, not two, not three, but four new different kinds of taxing elements, and there is one already in place that they're talking about using. And, you know, when you say anything related to that T word that ends in an X in Santa Rosa County, people get worked up because they hate taxes, really, really hate taxes. But is that the right attitude? Well, you know, we'll find out. Brad Baker here, the county administrator, explaining that of the first one they were taking up was to create a public safety MSTU, that is a ad valorem or a buy the property value tax on your home. An MSTU is different from a straight up property tax. There's a limit of 10 mils you can have for the property taxes, currently just under 6 in Santa Rosa County. You can also have up to 10 total all other MSTUs for a total maximum of 20 mils on your property taxes. That would be 2% of the value of your home every year. A mil is a tenth of a percent. Anyway, so Brad Baker says, look, this one was for about a third of a mil that we would use for public safety, EMS, for example, and fire. I think fire was in there anyway. And we would basically, like I told you, this would be a no tax increase. This would just be a tax shift from regular ad valorem and general revenue into the MSTU, and meant to show you how much money gets spent on public safety.
We're looking to be more transparent where the money is going, to get trust for the board and trust that we are spending money as we say we're spending it. So I believe one of the comments in the workshop was no better way for transparency than to put it on your trim notice, because people are not going to go pull our very lengthy budget. Well, I say not anybody. Very few people are going to pull our budget document and get into it.
Almost nobody. Let's be honest. Nobody's really looking at that. Even I. I mean, you know, it's kind of my job to know these things, and barely I ever even look at the budget. Kerry Smith.
Just to be clear, that 0.32 that's proposed is just basically a reallocation figure that was figured into it, right? This is not new money, correct?
That is correct.
When I say it's not new money, I mean this is not a new tax. This is something that's already being paid, and it's just a reallocation of the funds. And at the same time, that reallocation allows for transparency. So when you have people out there saying that Kerry Smith is proposing three new taxes on us, we can see how wrong it is.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't even say reallocation. It's relabeling. And in fact, this would restrict the way the money gets used, that it could only be used for public safety. So it's actually a restriction, not an expansion. But truth be told, if they vote in the MSTU, then they could always increase it later or decrease it later or not use it at all. We've got one in Santa Rosa County in place for law enforcement. It's been there for like 7 years. It's never been used. It's a potentiality. It's a placeholder. It's an option. Now, of course, they do intend to use it, but again, this one in particular was meant to be created and then offset out of the regular ad valorem, so that it's supposed to be no change to your tax. This one is supposed to be no change to your taxes.
It's not an increase unless three of the five of y'all make it an increase, okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, I was kind of expecting this to sail through. I was expecting the public to be more upset, but I was actually thinking the public would more show up when they have the number, because we didn't know how, well, this one they had a guess at how big it was going to be, but the other one, some of them they didn't really have any idea how much it was going to be. That's going to come later in the budget conversation. And even this 1.32 is just sort of a guess at the cost for public safety elements. But anyway, I was kind of expecting this to be no controversy much. But, well, guess what? Santa Rosa County, taxes. Somebody got into Rhett Rowell's ear.
I'm not super comfortable currently with this.
And he says,
while I trust every member on this board and our current staff as a whole, my concern, and what I'm still not comfortable with, our future boards, the tools that we are giving them.
Yeah, it's the old problem of if you create a government option to do something, you might use it well. The surveillance program that you create in order to thwart terrorism post 9/11, you might say, well, you know, George W. Bush is going to use that well. Will Obama use it well? Will Biden use it well? Well, you know, I mean, it's not the same thing, but you get the idea. Anytime government creates a power, the power can be used well by the people who install it, and then that might be misused by subsequent people.
Again, I completely agree that this provides a truth in trim, and that's what people want. I'm just still a little concerned with rolling it out for the future boards.
Yeah, and which, I mean, that's a fair concern, right? Anything you create could be abused by later boards. Of course, they could create it themselves. If they wanted to abuse it, they could just create it. They don't have to have you having created it in the past.
I think it appears to the public that we've done this kind of hastily, which means it appears to the public that they're going to be a little suspicious about it, and rightfully so. They have that right to do that, and I'm uncomfortable doing anything that even has that clout.
Even has that cloud over it. Yeah, no, and there's a sense too. I mean, like, I pay pretty close attention to these things. I didn't know this was coming. I, in fact, only really learned it because I happened to be preparing for the interview I do with Brad Baker every Tuesday after they have the Monday meeting, and I looked on the agenda, and I'm like, oh, lordy. Look, three new taxes is what it looked like to me, okay? And it was really not quite three new taxes. Well, it was really four. But, you know, one already existed, two placeholders, one would go up possibly. But anyway, this was the one that would just be it would be invisible to you, except that you would now see where your money is going to public safety. And he says, look, the public doesn't understand this. Public doesn't know what's going on. People think it's a tax increase when it's not. We've done this quickly. Let's be cautious about this.
Now, I'd like to know what the rate's going to be and tell the public this is what the rate's going to be.
That's right.
Just like
I agree.
Commissioner Burkett and Commissioner Wright said, we're not raising property tax, or we don't have to. This is what the rate's going to be. It's going to be exactly what it is now. And we're going to implement these taxing units. But you can't do that. You got to have these in place before you can set the rate legally, correct?
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. It doesn't seem like you have to do them at separate meetings. It seems like you could do it all at the same meeting. And I think people would maybe have preferred to know what the amount was for any of them before they decided whether to even create them in the first place. And that's been, you know, that information has been relatively unavailable, basically. Kerry Smith, who's the chairman, who was one of the big advocates for this.
You said you're uncomfortable for future boards, and I'm guessing that you're uncomfortable because of the fear of a future board possibly raising the mill on it. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah,
so statutorily, up to 10 concerns me that we are giving a future board that opportunity. I know that you can cap it. I know that we have that ability to say it, but it's just opened up. It's just a slippery slope, and I think that's the apprehensiveness that I have with it, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'm not blaming you for having apprehension. I'm just saying I'm trying to help you with this because I'm seeing it in a different light, because we have the power, three of us have the power to raise the millage to 10 on your ad valorem as it stands. So it's like that tool's already in place. We could, but three of us could at any time just say we're going to raise the millage rate to 10, max it out to the state's cap, And, you know, that's where it stands.
And that's right. Even without creating a special taxing unit, MSTU, for public safety or for anything, you know, you already have the one in there for law enforcement. Any subsequent board or even this board could raise the property tax 4 mils on you, could go up to the maximum of 10. He's exactly right about that. And so what he's getting at is that Rowell's reluctance to put this in place is born out of a fear that it might be abused, but it's already possible to be abused. Not putting this MSTU in place doesn't really solve that fear, especially since the law enforcement MSTU is already in existence. If, you know, the board in a year and a half comes in and they decide to raise it by 10 mils for the MSTU for law enforcement and 4 mils for general property taxes, they can. There's nothing to stop them other than angry voters who actually can't stop them. They have that authority.
That's where I'm getting a little confused, because you're comparing something that's already in place, basically. And I'm trying to help you kind of clear that up.
Sure, but this isn't in place. We're creating new taxing units that each have their own cap. That's where I'm at.
And there was a little bit of confusion, but basically the idea is that all of the MS, you could create 30 MSTUs, and all together in the aggregate, they can only be total of 10 mils. It's not like, and I had asked this, I wasn't sure either. If you create 3 MSTUs, does that mean you can suddenly make 30 mils? No, total of 10 between all of them. Now, it got a little interesting because Colton Wright was another advocate for this. And really the staff had kind of come forward with this plan as well. And the idea was, you know, which came out later in the conversation, that we can barely afford to pay for anything we want to do. And this is a way of creating funding. Not this one. Public safety is more just to show you where the money's going. It was the roads one that was much more the issue. But Colton Wright was really kind of making a passionate defense about this and saying, look, we can raise or lower millage right now. We reduced it last year. We can raise it again. And that's exactly right. And he says, look,
guys, you got to man up. And you got to say, regardless of someone being upset with me, I'm going to do the right thing. As a leader in your household, I can't imagine that you would let your children in your house or an extended family member influence doing the right thing as a father or the head of your household. Knowing what the future is, knowing what's most important for your family.
I know where Colton's head's at on this, but you always are on dangerous ground when you start talking about the government as the paternalistic, wise father making decisions for the kids, because the citizens are not the kids and the elected officials are not the fathers. I know where his heart's at, and I love Colton. I think he's an outstanding legislator. I just think that may not have been the most useful metaphor when talking about this. But he did bring up one that I thought was quite good, or at least, you know, relevant to the same kind of concept about how we keep making these plans for all of these projects. And this is not, again, not so much on the public safety one. This is going to come up more later with the roads one. But we keep making all these plans for all these projects, and then we won't actually fund any of the actual projects, or we won't create an extra revenue source to fund any of the projects. And, like, we're never going to get anything built. I mean, we're not going to widen Shemukla or Berry Hill or Woodbine or build a bridge to Navarre or any of the dozen other $500 million worth of projects that we need to do in Santa Rosa County.
I can't imagine anyone sitting up here would say, hey, honey, it'd be really nice to have a beach house in Key West. Yeah, and honey, that sounds great. My wife wouldn't say, yeah, Colton, that sounds great. Well, let's draw up some house plans for a beach cottage in Key West. Okay, let's do that. Let's spend $10,000, $15,000 to do that. And then just have this plan sitting there. And then go, man, it would be really nice if we had a cabin in the mountains of Tennessee. Well, let's spend the money planning that. So one day, if we decide to move to Tennessee and have a cabin, we'll have that too. And then, you know, gosh, my 1,500 square foot house isn't enough. I'd really like to have 3,500 square foot with a pool. So let's plan that too. And let's spend $10,000 on architect and engineering to look at what that looks like. And then have all these plans just sitting there that we've expended money or household income on, just to have them sit there and go, well, gosh, you know, we can't really afford any of that. And am I willing to take a second job? No. Okay. If you can't increase the revenue, you can't do those things. So why would you spend the revenue putting those plans in place? It defies logic and common sense.
See, that's actually a really good metaphor. Like, that's really an accurate metaphor. Like Berryhill, for example. You know, we're a couple million dollars into the design for that, but it's a $45 million project to do just the first phase of three. You know, and if you're spending $5 million out of your budget on capital every year, that means that, you know, in 9 years, you'll get one-third of the Berryhill project done, unless you have revenue from some other source. And look, it's not a matter of wasting money. Santa Rosa County is very lean and efficient with its use of money.
We do more with less. I put us up against any county in the state of Florida and would say we'd rank number one or two as the best and the most efficient. I haven't heard a single person here sit here and run down staff. We're talking about how great they are. Well, how much longer do we think we're going to keep staff if they're doing such a great job now and we've got all these needs? And people keep putting more and more and more pressure on them, and we're not willing to give them the resources.
They get frustrated.
I mean, it defies logic to me.
And?
Gentlemen, I'm just going to tell you, I'm tired of hearing people talk out of both sides of their mouths. And it's going to be obvious where I'm at on this stuff, but I think it's time for people to step up and lead.
Yeah, I mean, he's not right. You know, either say you hate growth, you're not going to build anything new, and okay, fine, we're going to live with bad infrastructure, or find ways to raise the revenue. And it's not like government can just wave a magic wand. You know, the county can't just print its money. Now, Trinity Coburn, who's one of the people that's been coming up to the county commission meetings talking about the, what is the name of that stupid road over behind the hangar that they keep fighting about, the one that was going to be open and then closed, and I all of a sudden just can't remember it. This is basically where a lot of people are, I think.
What concerns me is this appears to be kind of somewhat of a Trojan horse, potentially, where once it's in place, then property taxes could slowly start getting rolled in.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are afraid of. You know, it's going to start at a half a mil or a mil and then or whatever, and it's just going to go up over time. Ibis Road, by the way, occurred to me. So the vote eventually goes.
Make a motion to approve the public safety MSTU as stated.
Second.
All right. This time I'll call for a vote and just show of hands. And all in favor, raise your right hand. So we got two. All in opposition, raise your right hand. So we got three. So we got a 3-2 vote. It's a fail. All right.
And that's the easy one. Because that was going to be no property tax increase. How'd the other two go? Well, we'll talk about it next hour. 527 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, Dave Ramsey here. You've heard me talk about one car dealership in Pensacola, Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. Folks, new cars lose 11% of their value the second you drive them off the lot. So for years, Frontier Motors has been saving Pensacola residents thousands of dollars by getting them into the best previously owned vehicles. And thousands of people have enjoyed Frontier Motors' no hassle, no pressure experience. Just the best slightly used vehicles in town at a fair price. But don't take my word for it. Look around, and you'll start noticing all the Frontier Motors decals and tags. They're everywhere. So if you're in the market for a vehicle, do yourself a favor and see the friendly folks and the huge inventory at Frontier Motors. You can't miss them. Just look for the big buffalo on the lot. That's Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. And don't forget to tell them Dave Ramsey said hey.
You're great at protecting your personal information. You might even use things like two-factor authentication and strong passwords. But as much as you try to control how your info's protected, there are other places that also have it, and they may not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity's stolen, they'll fix it guaranteed, or your money back. Save 40% your first year with my name, Clay, as the promo code at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. It's hot in the summer, but you can bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, it's 9th Avenue Brass Band. This 10-member band has been bringing the true New Orleans style to Pensacola and surrounding areas since 2019. The 9th Avenue Brass Band never fails to bring the second line to the beach. See you there. No pets, no glass.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
I already had an IQ test this year. I don't think I've ever had
one. The action time is a factor in this, so please pay attention. Now answer as quickly as you can.
Hunter Bosser? That's right. That's the apartment where I live. Nice place? I guess. Is that part of the test? No. 529 on News. Just getting warmed up. 529 on... I've seen Blade Runner so many times. So many times. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Israel is still under heavy fire as tensions with Iran keep rising since Friday. Iran's launched around 350 ballistic missiles at Israel. A lot of those have been intercepted. Some have made it through. At least two dozen people have been killed. The attacks have hit Tel Aviv and Haifa.
Wow. Now, but the alternative is, you know, let Iran develop a nuclear weapon.
Absolutely.
Which is an absolutely unacceptable alternative.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz announces the arrest of the man accused of shooting two state legislators and their spouses, killing Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark.
After a two-day manhunt, two sleepless nights, law enforcement have apprehended Vance Bolter.
The victims were shot at their homes by a man disguised as a police officer. Investigators say a hit list included other Democrats and abortion providers. At least eight Israelis are killed in overnight missile strikes by Iran.
At least 100 others were rushed to hospitals from five impact sites. Several residential buildings were destroyed in Tel Aviv. The U.S. embassy there was also damaged. The overnight barrage is part of a wave of retaliatory attacks by Tehran following Israel's preemptive strikes targeting Iran's nuclear and ballistic missiles programs on Friday.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. Israel says it's destroyed 120 surface-to-surface missile launchers in Iran. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got clear skies, beautiful morning. We'll get more on our weather forecast here in just a few minutes. A domestic violence situation turned deadly in Baldwin County on Saturday. Officials say this incident happened at a home on Dominion Drive in Fairhope on Saturday night. Responding Baldwin County deputies found two people there with serious injuries that were brought to a hospital in Pensacola for treatment. One of those victims has died. The other still receiving treatment. 38-year-old Ryan Thomas Smith was identified as a suspect in that case. Now, officials say he had fled that scene before law enforcement arrived, but he was captured then after a high-speed pursuit on I-65 that ran from Baldwin County into Escambia County, Alabama. Deputies say they used the grappler system to stop his vehicle, and Smith is charged at this time with murder and attempted murder. Two people were hurt after a crash on Highway 29 over the weekend. That happened just north of McDavid between Cox and Sigler Roads. Officials say the incident involved a car and a rural mail carrier's vehicle. Firefighters had to extricate that mail carrier from their vehicle after the crash. Both drivers were taken to the hospital. I don't have an update on their conditions right now. The post office said the mail from that mail vehicle was retrieved and will be delivered. FHP is investigating that incident. Well, we are learning a little bit more about the numbers of people that have been taken into custody during immigration sweeps across southwest Alabama last week. At least 46 people were arrested between Baldwin and Mobile counties during federal operations. This comes after the FBI announced recently that they've made now more than 500 arrests across southern Alabama since mid-January. El Zoo Miami's oldest reptile celebrated a birthday over the weekend, and it was on Father's Day. The Galapagos tortoise by the name of Goliath, and he's now believed to be 135 years old, recently became a father for the first time when one of the eggs laid by his mate, Sweet Pea, hatched. An application's been made to the Guinness Book of World Records to recognize Goliath as the oldest first-time father in history. A social media post has a Pinellas County man now facing charges. Dunedin's Eloy Garcia was arrested for threatening communications or threats of a mass shooting. He wrote on Facebook that he was driving around and hoping to run across No Kings protesters so he could
run them over. Well, deputies say Garcia admitted to writing that post. And it is 5:34 here at News Radio 92.3 right now. Taking a look at our weather. We've got an absolutely gorgeous morning. Clear skies, 75 degrees right now in Pensacola. We are looking for a high in the mid-80s today. And we've got a no rain chance, very slight rain chance, that is, for today, but that will be increasing then throughout the rest of the week. We've got highs in the mid-80s this week. Our next news is at 6 o'clock, and we've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, and dependable. Let's get a look at our market report.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Nippon Steel shares rose 3% after President Trump approved its $14.9 billion bid for U.S. Steel. On Friday, Trump signed an executive order following the tie-up to proceed, contingent on an agreement with the Treasury Department addressing national security concerns. The companies then announced they had signed the agreement, effectively clearing the deal. Crude oil futures jumped more than 3% yesterday after Israel struck two natural gas facilities in Iran. U.S. crude oil rose 3.7 to $75.67 per barrel. Global benchmark Brent was up more than 4.9% at $77.90 per barrel. Bugaboo is voluntarily recalling more than 18,000 of its giraffe high chairs due to potential fall hazard. The company said the chair legs can separate from the frame if the screws connecting the legs are not properly tightened during assembly. The Consumer Product Safety Commission said it has received 13 reports of minor injuries. Futures are slightly higher. Friday, the Dow Industrials lost 769. That's Your Money Now.
This is the story of the one. As a lineman, he does whatever it takes to keep the power on in his community. And he wants a partner like Grainger who does the same. Grainger offers the professional-grade products he needs, from voltage detectors to harnesses to hard hats, plus fast, dependable delivery, so he can rise to every challenge. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every day, you enjoy the freedoms brought to you by the First Amendment. You can speak your mind, wear what you want. You can put a sign on your front lawn that says, "Vote for Bigfoot, someone you can believe in." Pray to the God of your choice, or don't. They're the freedoms that let you be you. All brought to you by the First Amendment. Learn more at freedomforum.org.
This message is sponsored by Freedom Forum and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the County Emergency Operations Centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
Are you looking for the best news and talk radio in Pensacola? Then tune in to News Radio Pensacola. We're your source for the latest news, weather, and traffic, as well as in-depth interviews with local and national leaders. We also have the best talk radio lineup in town, with hosts that are passionate about the issues that matter to you. So whether you're looking to stay informed or just want to hear some great conversation, News Radio Pensacola is the place for you. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
It don't matter, he's dope, he knows that, but he's pro. He's so stagnant, he knows when he goes back to this mobile home, that's when it's back to the lab again, yo. This old rhapsody, better go capture this moment and hope it don't do it. Lose yourself in the music, the moment you own it, you better never let it go. You only get one shot, do not miss
this,
it.
This is the song that my wife used to play for our boys when she was driving them to school to take a test. They would get them worked up. No, like, in a good way. You give me a weird look, like, why? No. because it's a pump-up song, right? Not the lyrics particularly. 539 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. On Friday, we had a chance to talk with Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2, as we do typically every Friday during session. And the session this year has been extra long. But maybe today could be over. Maybe today. We talked to him quite a bit about the budget and things that are in the works for today. Welcome back to the show, Alex Andrade.
Hey, what's going on, Andrew?
So, budget. We really might actually have one, and you guys are going to vote on it next week?
Yeah, we might see white smoke today coming out of coming out of the chimney. And once you see that white smoke, the 72-hour period where we have to let everything rest for 3 days starts. So, yeah, I think we're getting close. It's been an interesting, very long week. It's actually the longest session in Florida history. But I think today we should be able to lay the budget on the table. And once we lay it on the table, by the constitutional requirements, we have to wait 72 hours before we can vote on it. So hopefully we're voting on a final budget by Monday, hopefully around noon.
Oh, okay. So we might actually be done with session. We might sign you die again. Do we do it again on Monday?
Well, we never sign you die to the extended session.
Okay. All right. I got you. So people wore their weird colored socks for no reason whatsoever. Okay. But Monday should be the final end. And then we will have set the state record for, let's see, June 16th will have been the longest session ever. Interesting. Okay. So,
we have voted to extend it until the 18th. So we may end up voting on a budget on Wednesday, the 18th. But right now, the hope is Monday, the 16th.
And that's, of course, presuming that everybody votes and agrees and passes and the Senate and the House agree, which has been the problem so far. Lots of areas of dispute between the two branches. Let's start with your domain, because obviously healthcare budget, you know, the biggest silo of budget that you were in charge of that committee. A lot of things have come out of that, though, right? Including, you know, eliminating a whole bunch of full-time positions, some additional restrictions and requirements on ACA. Tell us what's going to come out of your side of the budget.
Well, yeah, Andrew, if you remember, I was proposing cutting something. I think it was like 2,500, nearly 3,000 positions from the state agencies within the healthcare silo. But over time, I mean, the Senate didn't want to cut nearly as many. And so we ended up essentially increasing the House budget to match up with the Senate's amount of cuts they were comfortable making. So in my budget, we'll ultimately cut 1,200 positions from state agencies. These are not like firing human beings. These are vacant positions that largely haven't been filled for like 180 days to a year or more. And so we just want to remove them off the books. I don't like measuring taxes by how much any one person pays. I measure taxes by how much we spend. And if we're spending money on unfilled positions, especially for more than 6 months, I view that as a tax. So the more positions we can eliminate, the more we actually shrink state government. And I believe that's like the only conservative way to view budgeting. So I'm happy we're cutting that many.
Yeah, and were you able to keep the requirement that ACA would disclose the data so you could conduct oversight properly? I know that had been for the secretary's pay. That had been one of the things that you had wanted in there. Is that still going to be in there?
So I'm not in on every single language negotiation. My understanding is that, yes, we do have an agreement on data sharing. So ACA is going to have to, by statute, execute a contract to share a bunch of data with us so that we can verify their Medicaid claims, like their statements about Medicaid and how much they're spending and how it's operating. I don't know if we're going to tie it to the secretary's salary or not. I don't know if the Senate will go for that yet, but no, I think at the end of the day, what we'll get is the more important part, which is an actual data sharing agreement where we can bring in our own actuary, we can do our own data analysis, and we can see, we won't have our hands tied by some private contractor telling us we have to increase Medicaid by $800 million mid-year.
You kind of mentioned working on the language. One of the things I think people might not realize is, but they probably think a budget is like a spreadsheet when it's really lots and lots and lots of words, right? And the words matter.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's a novel. So we have multiple different types of language. We have a conforming bill. We have an implementing bill. We have proviso language. We have back of the bill language. So there's, hundreds of pages of words directing state agencies on how to spend the money we're allocating in our budget. Like, for instance, one thing I learned this year while working on the healthcare budget is that our medical marijuana program has been operating under emergency rulemaking authority. So Department of Health has been drafting all the rules for our medical marijuana program under emergency authorization since like 2017.
What?
Meaning there's no sunshine, there's no process. DOH kind of does this without public comment or any kind of transparency. It would be the same as like us as the legislature never having a committee meeting before, like after filing a bill, before we just pass it and subject everybody to a law that we passed.
But not shaped by the legislature, shaped by the administration, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, we delegated the authority to essentially legislate medical marijuana, the program, to Department of Health. And then since 2017, they said, we can't do this in the sunshine, guys. Please give us emergency authority. It's stuff like that where, it's very tough to catch. But once you kind of realize what you're reading, you're stunned. We proposed that language yesterday. I believe the Senate is comfortable with it, and we'll be passing language in our budget that forces Department of Health to actually, make their rules in the sunshine going forward.
So you mean to submit to legislative oversight like the Constitution prefers? that's amazing to me.
Public oversight.
I know.
Like, have public oversight, be able to, allow for public comment. The state agency, draft your financial impact statements that you're required to do for rulemaking as a state agency. Just check all the boxes that we have there for a good reason, for transparency purposes, before, subjecting a whole industry to rules that you're making up.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. I was reading some of the Florida Politics, or Florida Day, excuse me, I forget which one it was now. Anyway, had a really good series of articles on all of the budget things. One of them that caught my attention was obviously the stuff about healthcare positions being eliminated. Again, unfilled positions, but also DCF, 455 positions in the Division of Child and Family Services. And are those also vacant positions? They're not eliminating actual bodies, because all we ever hear is that DCF is understaffed and underfunded.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing, Andrew. If you look at Florida Highway Patrol or like DCF or Department of Health, a lot of times they say they're underfunded, and yet you're looking at on the books all these FTEs that have gone vacant for significant periods of time. What we're trying to do is essentially fix the – it's not criminal, obviously. It's not like – it's just a bookkeeping practice that some government agencies enter into, which is they demand or say, we desperately need these positions. Those positions come with recurring general revenue. They don't fill those positions. They pocket the general revenue, and they use it to kind of smooth out other budget lines that they might need help with. So, imagine like the Department of Health had thousands of positions in county departments of health all across the state go unfilled for years and years and years. These are like doctor positions that they intentionally weren't filling. But what came with that was general revenue to the agency that they could use elsewhere if they didn't fill that position. What we're trying to do is just like fix the accounting practice where they're using FTEs to kind of sneak in general revenue that they can use, without restriction, so that we actually have a better grasp of how many people do we actually need in state agencies? How many people do we need to employ? And when it comes to general revenue, let's talk about it like general revenue and not like you actually need people when you don't.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this a couple of other times. FTEs, for people who don't know, full-time equivalent or full-time employee. And so pretending that you have to budget for these people that you never actually hire then gives you this money, which you can then use to, say, pay for overtime on people that you're overemploying or for other purposes, as you said, to smooth out other budgetary issues. But A, it's not transparent, and B, it looks like we're overspending on something we don't need to spend on. And, let's get some control of that. Any other notes on the budget you want people to be aware of before we look at getting it signed on Monday?
Well, I just for context on this FTE thing, I think this is the most bizarre story. When I was the transportation chair for the budget, Florida Highway Patrol asked the legislature for a pay scale adjustment, like a raise bonus structure. In one legislative session, we said no. They used some of that GR for unfilled positions to implement that pay structure. We told them they couldn't anyway. And then when we found out the very next year, they asked us for more FTEs instead of asking us to simply ratify the pay scale that we told them they couldn't do anyway. Like, we're active partners. It's not like we're trying to punish anybody or actually cut budgets, but like, you cannot use, like, Highway Patrol, Dave Kerner, I mean, like, they were absolutely using vacant positions for troopers, saying they were understaffed with no intention of ever filling those positions. I mean, it's just, it's not an honest broker way of setting our budget. So when you hear maybe Governor DeSantis say anything about us like defunding police, what he's talking about is letting Highway Patrol commit bank, like essentially just like cook the books so that they don't actually have to do better accounting. This is, no one in the legislature is defunding the police. But that was one of the weirdest DeSantis criticisms I heard this year.
Yeah, and that's such an, I mean, I there's a part of me that can understand why they would, but of course they cannot and should not. And that's, you know, the idea that they would get told no and then do it a different way is amazing. And it seems to be a problem across the board, across all these departments. I did want to ask you just briefly, you know, Nathan Boyles, of course, just won election in what was a teeny tiny minuscule turnout in Santa Rosa County and parts of Okaloosa County. Have you had a chance to talk with him since the election? And is he, I should have texted him or asked him directly, and I apologize, I'm asking you, but is he going to be part of the vote on the, like, this session has gone on so long that we might actually get a District 3 participant in the session for the first time?
I hadn't thought about that until this morning when we talked, Andrew, but I think he should be. I think the election results should be ratified by next week, Monday, Tuesday. So, I mean, my hope is that he gets sworn in on whenever we have our vote on the budget and gets the vote on the budget. And by the way, I'm extremely excited for Nathan Boyles to take on this role. I think he's going to be an incredible state representative. He's going to do a great job for Northwest Florida. So could not be happier to have a new partner over there in Santa Rosa County.
Very good. Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for the input, the perspective, the information, you know, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with my audience every week during session. I super appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 551 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates, now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates, leave the numbers to the experts.
At Pensacola Christian Academy, your child will thrive in a safe, caring environment designed to build a solid foundation. Kindergartners become confident readers, develop fine motor skills through cursive writing, and sharpen problem-solving skills with engaging hands-on learning. Experience the affordable excellence and unmatched value of Pensacola Christian Academy. Learn more at enrollpca.com/radio.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Summer season is here, and Florida summers can really be hot. But despite the warm temperatures, your garden can still produce some beautiful flowers and delicious vegetables. Get all of your garden tips from me, Mike Wiggins, on The Garden Line, heard on the Pensacola Expert Panel every Tuesday from 9 till 10, and Encore Hour Saturday from 9 till 10 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Garden Line is presented by Blue Sky Landscaping and Pensacola Hardware.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
How the hell are you going to get fired on your day off?
Yes, from the brilliant comedic minds who brought us the wise life advice, Puff Puff Pass. 5:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay at Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Hello?
Were you bringing me a Jaws story?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was. I'm glad you're waiting for it. 50 years after it scared people out of the water in theaters, Andrew, Jaws is now coming to streaming. The Steven Spielberg-directed movies on Peacock, celebrating its anniversary, and that includes the rest of the franchise as well, including Jaws 2, partially filmed in Navarre, Jaws 3, and Jaws the Revenge are all available on streaming now.
You know what's actually one of the most horrifying Spielberg movies? His first movie. You ever seen his first movie?
Which one was that?
The Duel. Or it might be just Duel. I forget if there's a "the" in it. It's about a guy driving on the road, like a traveling salesman, and getting terrorized by some completely anonymous driver in this horrible old just oil rig, trying to drive him off the road continually. Oh, yeah. It's short,
good.
Too. It's only like 87 minutes long, but it's very, very... It's a great movie.
See, that's one I haven't seen. I'll have to look that up.
Oh, you should go watch it. You'll enjoy it. You'll thank me. You'll thank me for that movie. Yeah, it's good.
I don't think I've come across many Spielberg movies that I really don't like.
Doesn't make a lot of bad movies.
No. They're usually all good, at least in their own way. I've got a couple other headlines for you.
Please do tell.
All right. Well, a weekend rally in Salt Lake City apparently turned deadly. One person died after a shooting during the No Kings protest there near a federal building. There were about 10,000 people at that protest, and police do have a suspect in custody in that case. And apparently some more measles news today. Health officials in Washington, D.C. say they are investigating after a person linked to international travel apparently was infected with measles and landed at the Dulles Airport June 8th. They, I guess, were all around D.C. visiting several areas, so they're working to track down anybody who may have been exposed there.
Do we have any updates on how many people who got measles were vaccinated previously?
Somehow that hasn't been released.
It's weird. It seems like there's a way to avoid it. I don't know.
What do we know?
Yeah, David, thanks so much for the update.
Anytime.
That'd be the news, you know. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. Informative. Local, dependable. John, did you go to any of the Happy Time protests over the weekend? The celebration of democracy, the anti-monarchical protests?
No, some of us had to work.
Yeah,
so,
all right, fair enough. It's kind of funny. You know, I had made a post with the pictures. They had a bunch of people at Graffiti Bridge, for example, on Saturday, and, you know, shared that on our Facebook page and, you know, said, look, I don't support what they believe in, but I absolutely support their right to do it, and I would fight to protect their right to say silly things. And somebody said, what, you believe in kings? Stop it. Come on. Don't play dumb with me. This protest is not merely anti-monarchical. You know, we already have one of those on July 4th, right? We already celebrate not having a king. You know, this is not purely about the philosophical question of whether to have a monarch or, you know, a constitutional republic or, you know, an oligarchy or an aristocracy. You know, not to insult, but I would suspect that there might even be some people at the No Kings protest who can't spell anti-monarchical. You know, I just think it's a possibility. and by the way, you know what's funny about this is Americans sometimes our problem, and I don't think we're alone in this in the world, but sometimes we think like our way is the only way and no other way is possible. Can you give a defense of a monarchy? I mean, it has been a relatively successful political system over history. You know, there is some of that in the Bible, although it wasn't preferred. It was supposed to be judges, and then the people begged, and it was a mistake. But okay, you know, they had kings in Israel. You know, the most common system of government throughout most of history was just, you know, hereditary monarchs. You know why that works? Well, if the king says it happens, you don't have to deal with all this bureaucracy. You ever complain about red tape and bureaucracy? Well, you know, you can have a monarch. It's faster. Not always good. But, you know, hereditary, you say, why would that be good? Clear line of succession. There's no question. You don't have to worry all these silly elections and fighting and bickering, and then people don't feel like they're in control of anything, and you say, that's bad. No, that's good. They don't have to worry about being in control of anything. So, Andrew, you sound like you're defending a monarch. Do you know how to defend? I mean, I know why it's bad, too, but, you know, you ought to be able to at least explain some of the reasons why it's been the most successful system throughout history, even if we don't agree. 92.